Previously on WMTA Question Mark.
There's a lot of things that you don't understand about me, Tina. I love you, but I also love other women.
Oh, Devin, why can't you be just like my father?
It looks like a bomb. I'm not sure how much time we have, but I'll try.
I've never made love with a fax machine before. But I guess there's a first for everything.
Has anyone seen Devin? I think his wife's about to jump off a bridge. And also, he owes me $9.
My love is not worth living. Bye, Devin.
Yo, sup? It's me, A Fizzle for Rizzle, the Rizzle Dizzle, aka Faux Shizzle, aka my nizzle is Rizzle on the sizzle. Shit. Yo, I got a dope ass guest on the show tonight. J to the OSH. A Bruner, a faux schooner, out in Cali, up front rowing blunts. Shit, this motherfucker, he been to Germany, motherfucker been to Houston, motherfucker been to Cali, motherfucker's been everywhere, man. Talk about shit, all kinds of shit, like rowing around, fuck, man, you tripping. Yo, man, just check this shit out, man. Shut the fuck up. Damn.
If you're going to San Francisco,
so how are you, dude? I haven't talked to you for a really long time, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm doing pretty good. I've just been traveling a lot the last couple of years, and I just moved back out to the Headlands, the spot you visited me in that once.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And this whole area was a military base built in, like, 1908. They built these buildings, 1907-ish, right around the earthquake.
Okay.
And yeah, it was like the first time the Army actually invested money into housing for U.S. soldiers. Before that, it was all tents.
No shit.
And so they built these amazing houses for them, and just to kind of boost enrollment and kind of like the morale of troops.
Yeah.
And then it just like over the years kept morphing with technology until it finally became obsolete in like the 50s and 60s with the atom bomb being invented.
Chickory chick, chala chala, chakala room, in a banana, kabalika walika, can't you see? Chickory chick.
They were going to turn it into like another ritzy little town like Sausalito, but at the last minute, some conservationists stepped in and were able to convince them to keep it as like a national park area.
Yeah, so now it's an actual national park then.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like the Headland Center for the Arts is out here, which is a great residency program.
Yeah.
Really great people come through there, like Will Oldham, and I've just
really
so many people.
Bonnie,
yeah, we
really
we
cool.
get some like amazing artists out here for like months at a time next door to us, and
wow.
try to take advantage of that as much as possible as a cultural experience.
Yeah.
But there's a hostel out here and like a lot of nonprofits basically, and a lot of people live out here that work for these nonprofits. And it's one of the more ideal scenarios in the Bay Area for housing, because we work here, we get paid a little less than people do in the city, but we get our housing for free, and we're right on the beach and
wow.
in the woods, and it's kind of a dream. And we're only like 15 minutes from San Francisco proper. I'm always like stunned I live here, and kind of forget sometimes how spectacular it can be.
Yeah, that sounds fucking amazing. It was very scary though, like the first time. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And there's a lot of history out here. I mean, some really sketchy shit went down
yeah.
out there.
Oh, I fucking yeah. know, man. I could feel that driving up these, like, it was like The Shining sort of shit, you know, when I saw the houses. We met in Austin, Texas, a few years before that. I'm going to guess like 2001, 2 or 3-ish.
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah, and at the time, I was like thinking that I was Jack Johnson or something. I was in Austin, Texas playing at bars. And then we met at like a... And you were Josh Wayne at that time.
Oh, Josh Wayne, yeah, my first and middle name.
Yeah, man, you were doing, like, country stuff, and it was cool, and we met at, an open mic?
Yeah, that's very likely. yeah, we were both, that was our main pastime, I think, was just, like, getting off of whatever meaningless job we had and, like, taking whatever songs we did in our free time and just playing them out live somewhere.
Right.
And of course, open mics in Austin are plentiful, so...
right. I feel like
we were on the circuit, you and I, and bumping into like old timers that were like still killing it, like Gary Graves, and yeah, I just remember that guy specifically, kind of like rocking my world back then.
Gary Graves, how do I not remember him? Did he play at those sort of things? Like, and I don't remember Gary Graves.
Yeah, he was like a smaller African American guy who like just wailed on the guitar.
Oh,
and had this great,
of course!
Great voice.
Yeah, he played like classical maybe, and he would like hand out. Yeah, I remember that, and he would hand out like burnt CDs to people, and
uh-huh.
you're kind of like, what? And then you put it in, and you're like, holy shit! But like seeing him live was. That's awesome. That's a blast from the past.
He had those intense eyes, man. He would just lock eyes with the audience and, like, sing
right.
these intense ballads. And, yeah, I just remember that. Because, like, I'm the type of person, and I don't know about you, but, like, I get up there and I just kind of shut down, like, the visual world. And I like to close my eyes and just not even really be present when I play. But he's the opposite, like, total connection. gonna like stare you down and sing
yeah.
like really like controversial sexy songs.
Yeah, that's right, he was like almost harassing people. I did remember feeling that was a really weird part of my life.
Oh, likewise.
So
yeah,
many
likewise.
Weird so much weird shit happened in fucking Austin, Texas. Gary Graves, so I'm glad I remembered that.
I've got a sweet tooth, licorice drops and jelly rolls. Hey, sugar daddy, Hansel needs some sugar in his bowl. I'll lay out fine china on the linen and polish up the chrome. If you've got some sugar for me, sugar daddy, bring it home. Blackstrap molasses, you're my orange blossom, honey bear.
You've been in California for how long, Jarsh?
I moved out here in 2005. I had a camper van, and my girlfriend at the time and I were just going to come out here for a vacation. Last minute, she just convinced me it was a good idea to quit our jobs and just live in the van and try and make a start out here. And nice. So we just, we packed it all up into this camper van and came out, started in San Diego, and just worked our way up the coast, not knowing where we were going to stop. And everything just kind of opened up in the Bay Area for us quickly. So, I just kind of set up roots up here. It's kind of the longest I've ever spent anywhere, since, you know, being a child and
yeah. whatnot. Do you like San Francisco?
It's a love-hate thing. Like, I'm more in love with the surroundings. Like, there's just so much great nature to explore around here, and the weather is amazing.
I bet, man.
The city itself has changed quite a bit in the time that I've been here, more towards the tech industry. So the house, no one can afford to live in San Francisco.
Right.
Everyone's getting evicted and moving to Oakland or L.A. I've kind of been in that group. I was living in the city proper recently and just kind of got pushed out and gave L.A. a shot, which was fun. Like, it just didn't pan out, and so I ended up back up here.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you went to Los Angeles for a while. Interesting. Cool.
Yeah, I was there for 4 months at the beginning of the year. But it's a little difficult to get a start there the first time. Everyone says it kind of spits you out the first time, and then you can come back and have a better idea. But the main goal was to see if I even liked it down there at all, which
right.
I did. I thought it was great. You know,
oh, cool.
I grew up in Houston. I'm used to the car culture. It didn't shock me at all. But, it was the most temperate winter that I've ever experienced, which is one of my life's goals, is to just, like, never worry about the winter months again.
Yeah. Right. That is nice. That's a really wonderful, like, they always called it the sunshine tax, but that's really what it is, man, in California and a lot of places on the West Coast. It's just like beautiful weather. But I do remember when I was in San Diego, it almost seemed at times like the weather was mocking me. Like, if you didn't feel good or you didn't feel up for whatever, you know, you walk outside and it's just like, God damn it, another sunny day, which sounds, you know, like crazy to Midwest, you know, people, because that's all they want to do is go on vacation, you know, to some place that they're not, you know, preferably sunny. So, but cool.
Yeah, so some people are more seasonal types. I prefer the seasons to stay pretty constant, but it mostly coming from where I live now, I'm shrouded in fog most of the summer. So I appreciate the cool air this time of year, but after 8 years, I think it was in my back of my mind, like, I just need to sweat it out a little bit for a while.
Yeah.
And just kind of like experience real weather, because it doesn't change much from here to there. It's like kind of foggy all winter here, and then like in the summer, and then in the winter, the temperatures don't drastically drop. It just stays kind of like overcast. So it doesn't really change much outside of the Indian summer. Should we talk about the weather?
Do you communicate with people other than your family, like high school or, you know, whatever, college or from your hometown or your home environment?
Not really at all. There's maybe like one or two people outside of like my mother and my immediate family.
Okay.
I Texas is a whole nother world to me now since
yeah.
I've been out in California so long. And I only get back there maybe once a year at the most.
Okay.
So it's kind of nice. I just go back there and I don't have a bunch of people bugging me and like no one recognizes me anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a stranger there and
cool.
it's all for the best because I can slip in and out of there without having any hangups or like weirdness.
Yeah, like a 45-minute conversation at a dive bar where you find like some guy and you're like, fuck, I kind of remember your face, but you're fat now. And like, I kind of remember your wife, but she's fat now. Like, that's terrible, but that's just the way like things go. And or they have like six kids and you're just like, I honestly, like, I don't know. I remember when I first moved back, there was a lot of that, just sort of people sort of trying to connect and you're just like, fuck, like, it's not like a personal thing. I just literally, you know, had spent time learning three different cities in the past 6 or 7 years. You know what I mean? So it's hard that.
So you left San Diego and then you headed back to Kansas City?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you've been there for like a number of years now, right?
Yeah, I guess I don't remember.
What is that like for you? Because I try and imagine, like, I almost tried to move back home right before I moved down to L.A., mm-hmm. and I went back to Houston for, like, you know, I was going to, I don't know, I stayed there for 2 weeks, and then I just knew, like, I got to book my ticket back
right
to California, and so I spent a month there total, and just, like, I don't know, I just kind of felt, maybe it's different because of, like, the culture there, but, like, I feel like I can't really feel that comfortable there because, you know, a while back I would go home and I would get catcalled, you know, Osama and terrorist because I have a beard, right?
Seriously?
And then now I go back and everyone's just like throwing me thumbs up like, Duck Dynasty dude! And I'm just like, whoa, that's a huge swing from like condemning me as a terrorist to like, you know, bringing me up to like some like reality stars level or something that you're in love with, and I'm just like I can't really relate to people in my hometown. So mm-hmm. yeah, I'm just curious, like how was the transition for you going from something like San Diego and Austin, and then headed back home and like settling in there? How did that feel for you?
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name. Knows your name.
Moving back was really weird, I guess, at first, and it is kind of weird sometimes. Here's kind of what I've learned is that we're all limited in different ways, and so there's lots of different purposes that we also all fill, and so I think that I was really, especially at first, and even up until maybe more recently, hyper-focusing on the differences in almost everybody and everything that I saw in my environment, to friends, to, you know, just people that I socially interact with. And now I've just kind of shifted that to like, well, you know, it is what it is. I'm not going to fight that. I'm not going to move to fucking, you know, some magical happy place where it's just people that, you know, are yes men or just people that I'm just like. And then, you know, like, because that's not a culture in its own, like, that's not expanding your consciousness. You're just kind of getting, like, this parallel, weird, looking in the mirror sort of, you know, life.
Hey, man, I'm joining a religious cult.
Now, that's ridiculous.
Well, I'm joining it, so you gotta sign up, too.
What are you talking about?
Hey, don't fuck me on this, man. Just sign up.
No, I'm not gonna join a cult!
I can't believe you're pulling this shit on me after Monday night.
What?
I wanted to watch Monday Night Football, and you wanted to watch that other show, and we watched your show. I did that for you!
Yeah, well, you kept flipping back to the game.
I wanted to see the fucking score! What do you gotta do that's so fucking important? You can't join the religious cult with me!
There's nothing wrong with what we do, say, or think. If anyone says anything bad about us, they're the one who's wrong. Kill the black sheep, chase him away. Stone the non-believer. Our dogma is infallible. No, nothing's wrong here. Everything is fine.
Kansas City, here I come. Kansas City is fucking cool. Like, you know, there's cool people in the city proper. You know, it does have a pretty cool music scene. I know people here now. Like, I know the people at the coffee shops that I go to, and they're really cool, and I enjoy their coffee. And I know people that own bars and restaurants and that are, you know, teachers or you know what I mean? Like, I feel like this is finally a community that I fit a piece of the puzzle in, and I like it. But, you know, is it the end-all be-all? I don't know. I don't think there is one. I think that I can establish myself as a resident of Kansas City, but I think that I need to travel too. You know what I mean? And I think that I need to go see different parts of the world because I haven't done that for a while. But I don't know if there's like a utopian place, you know, to just kind of live and cultivate life and ideas, because I haven't really found it. Like, I tried to do that in San Diego. It definitely is not me. I tried to do that in Austin. It's definitely not a place to where I'd want to move back to. And I honestly, I don't know where the fuck I would go, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Where would you, you know, where would you go if and live if you weren't in San Francisco?
I'm probably going to try and bounce back down to LA.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. You liked LA. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's the same thing that you're saying though. Like, I knew as soon as I got down there, like this isn't like the answer to all my, you know, location problems. But I was just like excited to get to know a new city, you know. And yeah, I'm kind of jealous of you because you have this like love of your hometown. You've got a great spot to go back to, and I have a lot of friends who grew up in like some pretty rad spots, and they don't mind going home like multiple times a year and like seeing everybody. And
well, I
and
will say me, this:
I'm a little jealous because like I don't have that same feeling about like South Houston where I grew up.
Okay,
it's just kind of like obligatory because I need to go see my family.
Yeah,
but like I never enjoy the surroundings. It's just cultural, you know. Like it's a really like conservative region, and I don't think the same way, you know. I was a black sheep as a child there, and I was into art, and everyone else was going and shooting deer, and like, you know, so I was always on the outside of whatever cool was, because cool there included just like everything with guns, and I was just like, I'm not really that into guns.
Hey, I'm Garrett Gilroy, owner of Garrett's Guns. Come on down to Garrett's Guns.
Hey, it's me, Skeeter, Gary's second cousin. I tell you what, man, we got all kinds of guns. We got a big gun, I got a small gun. Man, the other day I got a medium gun. There's a gun for an old guy. Man, we even make a gun for babies. It's awesome.
The only thing better than having one gun is having nine guns. That's why we have our special buy one, get eight free for a limited time. The end is near. The Dark Lord Osiris has risen once again and has taken earthly shape in our material universe in the form of immigrants and people that can read. The only way for you to protect your family is by amplifying your own illogical hierarchy of beliefs that are deeply rooted in implausible fears perpetuated and exploited by the evil corporations like the American media, so that you feel helpless enough to allow your ever-growing cognitive dissonance to finally resolve itself in the form of a weapon that by the very means of purchase could instead end up inflicting harm on you or the ones that you love, even possibly ending in death. So come on down to Gary's Guns, because your neighbor already has. No, seriously, he's here right now. I'm about to sell him a gun.
I met you back in the day, back in Austin, Texas.
Yeehaw,
all right. And we were trying to, like, play open mics places, and no one really gave a shit. Yeah, you were really good, though. You had, like, a kind of, like, a southern drawl, kind of, and you played this, you know, kind of country music. It wasn't, like, pop country, but, you know, you had that country thing going, and then I could tell you were kind of, like, evolving. Like,
yeah, well, I started doing this, this kind of rock band called Moonquakes.
Okay.
This is, I think, after you took off and I moved back there from Houston and started getting more into, like, psychedelic rock. I think I listened to the first Pink Floyd album with Syd Barrett. That kind of just blew my mind. I just hadn't really gotten that off into psychedelia before that. And just, like, yeah, it took like this. They were approaching this, like, pop sound that the Beatles had kind of cemented back then and just twisting it up and looking at it through some really tripped-out glasses. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting approach to music. And so I started a rock band. And, I played with these guys, the Trevino Brothers, and they were a really good backing band. And we we kind of came up with good ideas, and they helped me out getting some stuff recorded, but ultimately it was just kind of like a step towards what I would start doing out here in California shortly after. But then I did do the City Mouth Country Mouth with Shelley. We did this, like, kind of country, psychedelic country duet kind of thing for a while. But then, you know, I just started kind of, like, realizing I just write sad-ass songs all the time. And, like, why am I not happy?
Yeah.
And I just started to realize, like, the content of my lyrics, which normally are just, like, vaporous and come from nowhere, usually, were kind of shaping my life a lot. And so at a certain point, I just decided, like, no more sad songs. Like, let's just have fun. And so I had to get out of the whole country thing together, because, it's, you know, once you start making happy, funny country songs, then you're just getting a little hokey. I just decided, yeah, maybe rock and roll is the way to go to kind of get out of this funk or whatever.
That's cool, man. It's cool that you allowed yourself to do that. I feel like a lot of people, especially if you have the sort of fortunate / unfortunate happenstance of, you know, the stars align and you, whatever, you know, you're a talented person, and then, you know, you get picked up and these, you know, corporations or whatever put money behind you, which is not a bad thing. I'm not trying to, you know, obviously, like, that would be super fucking cool, but just think about sort of, like, going through that with a certain thing, like being an unpolished artist or just having a fucking idea, you know, that you're trying to see out, and then you decide, like, I don't really, like, you know, that's not really my identity, and trying to change, like, that's kind of the downfall of a lot of creative people, because they get tied into and they have so much writing on this specific sound or whatever, and then they don't have the opportunity, or maybe it's just, like, perceived they don't have the opportunity to kind of change, and they just, like, do the same fucking thing over and over again, and they, you know, end up becoming, you know, super depressed or whatever. But that's cool that you took the time to realize that, have, like, this I don't know, the courage to listen to whatever and just be like, dude, I'm not sad all the time. And if I'm sad all the time, maybe it has to do with the fact that I'm writing sad songs, and, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So what was that like for you to, like, start to do that? And then, like, was there, like, were you hesitant at first? Like, you know, because were you tied to like what that identity, what that creative identity was?
Well, around the same time, I think I started to realize a pattern in my life that like every 6 months or so, I was just switching up the game completely on myself and just exploring a new genre and trying to write a whole new album of songs in that style. And, you know, not every one of them panned out or came out how I probably would have liked them to, but I felt it was just like, you know what, I just have to, like, keep on learning styles of music and not be afraid of approaching any kind of music, and know that I'm not going to be, like, the best at this because I'm just starting to explore it. But, like, let's go ahead and see what I can do with the skills that I have and this love for the style of music. And just, you know, push record and see what happens. And so I feel like I'm still doing that today. Like, you know, I just naturally am an explorer with it and not like trying to find one distinctive sound, but rather just trying to find something new. You know, like people that pull all the time, you know, just want to see a new place as frequently as possible. I feel like the same thing with music. Like, It's a traveling experience in a way for me.
Yeah, like a nomadic adventure, you know, like to be like a nomad of music is something that a lot of, as far as creatively, a lot of people possibly don't allow themselves to do. And especially if you're like really kind of fall into like a certain sort of thing. Like I feel like because we're all, at times we become sort of, I don't know, we tend to act upon our reward. Like there's always there's a reward system, I guess, for music, being an entertainer or trying to create stuff. Like when people react positively to something, you know, even if maybe that's not your favorite thing, you tend to want to try to, like, it's in the back of your mind to try to recreate that. And I feel like I kind of did that for a while, to where I find a specific thing that, you know, like the chill sort of singer songwriter thing and not really like progress past that, like maybe do it on my own or maybe try to go all these different directions. But like what I present in front of people, you know, is like this same super calculated or was like music identity. Here's what it is. Here's where I'm trying to go. And then it just, yeah, like that, it's almost like the creating part is so amazing. And then the presenting it part can really just be a bummer sometimes, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way, and it's funny because, like, after about five or six years of, like, fronting a rock band and, like, you know, trying to make that a lucrative thing to keep my band interested in playing.
Right, shows, yeah, because you have to fucking
the way it goes is they always start off so eager and, like, willing to do anything, and then after about 6 months and they realize they're not on the cover of Rolling Stone,
yeah,
then they're like, oh, I'm not making any money either, and then things start to kind of deteriorate from there. But, yeah, so now I kind of have just kind of gone with the times because, you know, this last economic downturn and everything, it just became a kind of a stressful thing for me to try and hold the band together. And I just decided it's time to do like something I can do on my own. I'm not going to go back to being a singer-songwriter because that's just like terrifying to me, to just like be up there by myself after having a band behind me. And so I decided to create this whole new Jackson persona where, you know, exploring electronic music and old like krautrock and hip-hop and R&B and just kind of mashing it all together. And I go up on stage and I have these backing tracks I craft in my bedroom, and then I can just grab a microphone and just sing my ass off and just like not bring, you know, I haven't played guitar seriously in like almost 2 years now.
Oh, wow.
Because I've been having so much fun with this. And I thought the first show that I did like that, I was like, people are going to walk out. My friends are going to like laugh at me. But at the end of that show, I got way more positive feedback than I ever did slaving over the guitar and teaching a band my songs. And
cool.
I was just like, wow, that was easy, and it felt great. And I got all the money for the gig, and I didn't have to rehearse. And I'm just like, this is my new jam.
That's so cool, dude.
I got my brain on my money. I get good brain for my honey. Throw it up like a honey. It up like it's blooded,
all choked up.
Can't even tell you about it. Can't can't even tell you about it. Man, my girl's so dope, I'm a dope fiend without it. Got my hands up on it, man, I'm on it. Puts a drop down and a comeback on it. And I'm kinda like, and I'm kinda like, and I'm kinda like, girl, start from the top. And I'm kinda like, and you kinda like, and you kinda like, let's take it to the bottom. And you know that ain't no problem, I can solve it like vanilla. I'm a troubleshooter, shorty, I've evolved from the gorilla that I used to be before we instantly fell into a life feeling. And it's the chill-ass feeling.
And I think my first show was at this little bar called Amnesia, which is one of my favorite little spots in the city. And they're easy to book with and allow us the time to come in there and just kind of like try things out on audiences. And they have a good amount of foot traffic, so it's not really pressure type of gig. And just kind of cut my teeth with it there, you know, here and there playing live shows. And then I went to Germany for a while. I was going to try to move to Berlin, and I brought the project there. But ultimately just ended up doing a lot of recording there and not playing out live. I just did a couple of DJ sets here and there. But
cool. Where did you live in Berlin? Not like, I don't know the city at all, but I mean, like, you just got an apartment, or how did that transpire?
I did like an Airbnb thing. A French couple had an empty room up on there. And I just like with them and told them what I was about, and they were musicians too. And so they're like, oh, this will be perfect. And so I just moved in with them for a few months in Kreuzberg. And that's just like a really, kind of cheap place to live, but also trendy. That's, you know, how those two things go together well. Hmm. And yeah, it's mostly Turkish. It would be one of like the Mission in San Francisco, which is mostly Hispanic, but it's still got like the hipster aspect to it. And yeah, just kind of set up there, and I'm pretty reclusive even when I'm like traveling abroad. So I'd spend a lot of time just like making songs in the bedroom, and then go out and like in the middle of the night and just, you know, take a stroll or a bike ride or something and go see some stuff, maybe stop in and see a show or something if I had some extra money or something. But it was a fun time. I liked Berlin a lot. And I went there, I was chasing a girl, like that was the whole thing. There were actually multiple women that I was infatuated with that I thought like, oh, if I'm only like in their proximity, this would work out a lot easier. And
yeah, I've done that before.
It only complicated things.
So wait, was there a number of girls in Berlin? Like you were chasing multiple women in Berlin?
Yeah, I'd met two women from Berlin.
What? How did that happen?
Two separate women from Berlin in pretty close proximity time-wise, but they didn't overlap in my life. And then I just kind of kept correspondence with them. One of the girls, our kind of relationship or whatnot, kind of had a weird falling out that I wasn't really certain why that had happened, and I wanted to just go and explore and like see if she would open up about it with me.
What happened? What do you mean? Can you talk about it or no?
Well, it was just an odd thing. Like, I guess, you know, whenever I met her, she was traveling, you know, and we just had a fling, and maybe I just, you know, took it a little too seriously. The way it just felt more serious than it was, I think.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah, I saw her again, and she had totally, it was kind of like the thing where I go pick her up at the airport, and like, I'm so stoked. And then when I get her to my house, then it's like, oh, you know, we're just friends now. And I'm like, oh, okay. Not what I thought at all.
That's the worst. Why did you tell me this?
She didn't explain anything to me at the time, so I was just kind of bummed out and had tons of questions. But I let it go, and then I met this other girl from Berlin who was staying out here at the art residency next door. And, you know, we fell in love and, like, had this really brief, like, two-month affair out here, knowing full well she had a serious boyfriend of like 10 years back
you
in Berlin.
You son of a bitch.
But they had an open relationship, and you know, so it was all legit in her eyes. And so then she went back, and it was kind of a hard goodbye for both of us. But we kept in contact, and it was like, you know, Skyping, and then it turned into like dirty Skyping.
Yeah.
I was like, why don't I just go there and see if it continues, you know? And of course, when I got there, it was kind of like I was putting her boyfriend in an awkward position.
Well, yeah, dude, you get your ass kicked or whatever. That would be super.
But it was just, you know, like,
what about that?
I had all these unresolved things that I just needed to be present for, I thought. And so I went there, and neither of them worked out. And I felt really good about both of those experiences, though. It didn't crush me. It didn't make me feel bad. I really felt like I gave it my all. I went out, and I fucking went to Berlin and gave it a shot, you know?
How long were you there? 4 months, you said?
It's close to 4 months, yeah. I guess like right around three.
Three, okay.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
I had to get out of there because I thought maybe I would get a job or like look into a scenario where I could stay and just kind of check it out for a longer amount of time. But then winter kept, you know, like showing itself, and they were, you know, I started talking to people about how cold it gets there, and I was like, maybe this isn't the place for me. So I'm kind of a baby about that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And,
well, you're from Texas.
I'm from fucking Texas, man.
Bro.
And,
Texas, so, bro.
but it was an experience, and I loved it. It was great, you know. And I'd love to go back and just spend some time without all that kind of stuff preoccupying my mind. But yeah, we'll see how that goes.
So that's crazy. Like, you just made the decision, and then like, was it super? Like, did you just do it right away? Was it like a lot of planning? Or
I booked it. Like, I made the whole thing happen within a month of when it kind of jumped into my mind.
Badass.
And I sold my car. I sold everything and pared it down to a backpack and my violin.
Wow.
And I just like went with that, and that's everything that I had.
That's right, dude. And I forgot you played violin.
Yeah, I play like Cajun fiddle from time to time.
Wow.
And so I thought, like, bring that so I can busk if I'm, you know, busted and don't have any money.
Yeah.
But it never really came to that, but I was glad I brought it. And then I didn't have anything but that and a laptop and I don't have much more than that right now still. Like, I bought a car when I got back from another friend that I know from Berlin that bought one over here when she was visiting. But, you know, other than that, I haven't been able to invest in any gear recently because I just keep bouncing around so much.
Traveling,
and that's just like, you know, biting at my finances.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think I had this stroke of luck happen to me in a small disaster where I just got, you know, this car from my friend, and I just paid for it, and the thing doesn't lock, and I was in Oakland for like 2 months and never did anyone break into my car, and then I moved back out here to the woods, and like within a week, fucking 30-foot tree branch drops on my car.
Oh fuck.
And I'm just thinking like, oh, it's just fucking totaled. I don't have a car. And they come and cut it out with like bulldozers and shit. And then, it just barely fucking fucked my car up. It knocked the mirror off, dented the hood. I already had a cracked windshield, but I didn't tell them that. And then they were like, yeah, well, you know, go get a estimate done, and you know, we'll file the claim or whatever. And it's like a $3,600 job to fix it. But, you know, I'm hoping that the government's going to cut that full $3,600, and then I can buy like a laptop, and, you know, I can just splurge on some gear.
So sweet.
But yeah, the car is totally fine. I can still drive it everywhere, and I might have a fat
paycheck
balance. And, yeah.
Nice.
As I walk down the street, seems everyone I meet gives me a friendly hello. I guess I'm just a lucky so-and-so. The birds in every tree are also neighborly.
That's super, that would be fucking badass. So tell me about I guess what you're doing now as far as musically and kind of where you're at and that sort of that, you know, combination of Jackson with all those different genres and just sort of like where you're heading.
Yeah, so I guess this, I just finished recording and mixing this this new album. It's called Young Dolphin, and it's a step further towards pop, what I feel like is pop to me, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, hip-hop is now the most pop-oriented music that we have as a culture at the moment. It's just taken over, and I love that. I mean, I love hip-hop, but I feel like it's hard to not, like, groove with a good hip-hop beat, and then if you can, like, MC or sing over it, then, like, you're really doing something special. So I'm trying to look at, like, people like R. Kelly, you know, like, there's, like, Frank Ocean, all these guys.
Yeah.
a couple of other people, like DJ Mustard, all these like, hip-hop guys that are making hits right now, and R&B guys, and just try to, like, I still kind of approach recording and all this stuff in a way that I did when I was in a rock band, you know, so, and, like, into, like, kraut rock and stuff, so mm-hmm. I feel like a little more of a skewed view, like I was talking earlier about how Syd Barrett and Pink Floyd kind of took the Beatles and put it through a filter. I feel like I'm trying to do that same thing, like, with the current pop music that we have, and it, you know, my shit's weird. I'm totally embrace the fact that I'm a fucking weirdo, and, like, anything that I even try to do normally is still gonna be weirder than the weirdest thing a normal person does. So I'm just embracing that now, and just, like, and like, not even afraid to, like, experiment at this point. So, like, for someone to tell me maybe, like, 5 or 6 years ago, like, you're gonna make a fucking, like, R&B hip hop album and it's gonna be fucking weird as shit, I probably would have, like, never believed them. But now, like, I'm just like, I'm gonna dive right in on this, and, like, I'm just gonna attack it and have a great amount of fun with it, and so far it's been one of the more gratifying albums I feel like I've worked on, just because I came at such a free approach like that.
Some people think they jive, but I know they must be crazy. Don't see their misfortune, else they just lazy. Just with the glass on me, I yell up the Charles on me. Ain't afraid of no tomcat, fuel my brains with poison. Walk through the fire, fly through the smoke. See my enemy at the end of the road. Walk on pivot near, see what they can do. Walk on gilded splinter with the king of the Zulu.
Cool, man. That's really awesome to hear, and that's just cool that you're just kind of doing it, and also not just doing it, but also presenting it and continuing to, like, show people and go for it. Like, I've been afraid to do that with some things creatively in my life. I've recorded so many songs, and I just kind of either didn't release stuff and kept it on a hard drive that, you know, I dropped, and then it broke, and I'm like, well, there's 200 songs that I don't remember and I'll never show people or whatever, you know, or I just, you know, I'll give myself the freedom to do whatever, you know, I'm in the studio and then I think of something and I'll record it or I'll just play it. And then it never becomes, like, actualized by, like, showing people or posting it or whatever, or maybe I'll post it and go away. Or, like, I feel like two things, you know, like the last two things that I've done that I've really kind of been like, well, fuck it, I'm just going to do it. One of them was this last show that I played, and, you know, I don't play out a lot, definitely not as much as I want to. I seem to kind of go in and out of these modes of, like, tuning in this, you know, sort of radio station somewhere out in the peripheral, and then I get motivated, you know, super manic bouts of motivation to where I'll just, like, record and write, like, 27 songs, you know what I mean, like, in a week, and then I'll get burnt out or something will happen, it'll go away, or, you know, maybe I'll spend too much time, you know, drinking or doing other fucking whatever bullshit, and then it goes away, and then I'm like, it's not even that important anyway, you know, it'll be there. But anyways, I put together, like, I just kind of like you just booked that flight and then gave yourself a month just to kind of get your shit together. I did that with a show a couple weeks ago that I kind of, my friend in Kansas City here owns like this really cool small little bar. Perfect opportunity to finally show people this is kind of what I'm trying to do. And it just fell upon deaf ears. People walked out. My friends were kind of like, you know, they were cool. Like, I think a couple of my friends were like, yeah, this is super cool. But like, there was some, like, I had this one chick that I don't really know. I know her husband and them kind of through like going to like sporting events or whatever. And she really dug some of my other stuff. And she kind of showed up and was like super excited. And like, she was gone before I was finished, I feel like. And it was just this awkward thing of like a failed reception, something you put, like, I wasn't trying to take myself too seriously, you know, because I think that that's like a really slippery slope in creative, you know, sensibility and art. Like, if you have too much riding on the initial response, then like, who are you really? You know what I mean? Are you trying to parrot things to where, you know, you get like immediate gratification, or, you know, some people just have to find their audience and sometimes it takes a while. But I was just kind of like, I just was bummed, you know. And it's not like it was like terrible and people were like, fuck you, but it was just people, you know, when there's nothing worse than clearing a room, especially if the stuff that you're doing that's clearing a room, it feels really good. It's really confusing, right? Like, has that happened to you before?
It has, yeah, and it has, and I've also seen that with, like, in interviews with, like, huge pop stars who try out, and rock stars who've tried out new material at a live gig, and people just, you know, screaming for their hits, and, like, no one even, like, bothers to clap for the new song. And so, yeah, I think you just kind of have to, like, take that as a indication that you took a step past where the audience has gone, and maybe they need to take a step forward to catch up with you.
I ran down the road, pants down to my knees, screaming, please come help me. That Canadian shaman gave a little too much to me, and I'm writing a novel because it's never been done before. First house that I saw, I wrote house up on the door and told the people who live there they had to get out, cause my reality is realer than yours, and there's no time in the present. And there's a black dog on the bed.
And boom, okay. I lost you. My phone's about to die anyways too. I'm a fucking idiot. I should have charge it back up. But yeah, we should, like, you should come on, like, whenever you want to, and that would be cool. Like, you could be like a reoccurring guest whenever you have the time, and we can just talk about whatever the fuck we want if you're up for it, Jarsh.
Yeah, dude, this is fun, man.
Yeah, it is cool, man. Even just to, like, I should just use this as an excuse to talk with all of my old friends, because if you haven't noticed, I'm very long-winded, but I think with the opportunity to be, I think you are too, so that's cool.
No, yeah, well, I think, I picked up on it right after listening to your first podcast. I was like, oh, Andrew's really good at guiding this conversation. And
sometimes.
yeah, but, I mean, it's good to be loose in a way, too, because you don't want the audience to catch on to any patterns, you know, like throw them a curveball from time to time like you're doing. And, yeah, I think you got a good thing going, dude.
Thank you, man. When I first decided I wanted to do it, the easiest thing was to be like, oh, well, I want to interview like people just specifically in bands and just make it like a band or like musician, I don't know, podcast, to where like tell your story and then how did you have the courage to challenge the status quo. And then the more I kind of like thought about it, and I had this conversation with my mom, her podcast, I was just like, oh, okay, like, you know, even that's kind of cliche. So maybe be a little even more open-minded to that, because sometimes it's easy when you are looking through your own little filtered lens to not understand that, you know, the way you view the world is not the way other people view the world necessarily. And there's always, an opportunity to learn from even people that you feel that have nothing to teach you. And those people, a lot of the times, teach you the most because you've spent a lot of time developing some sort of bias or some sort of reason to separate yourself from them, whether it's because of your ideology, your philosophy, your theology, whatever, your schools of thought. You're like, oh, that person thinks this way, I think this way, there's nothing I can learn from them, you know, whatever, like this is just the way things are. But now the older I get, the more that I learn that the exact opposite is true, and these sort of like projected differences that I see or had seen in people are actually just internal things that I'm sort of projecting onto other people. Now, that being said, there's definitely people that are like, you know, bigots, or definitely people that are just bad people, whatever, preferences, that's fine. But I do think that we're all kind of a part of this bigger thing that we don't necessarily understand all the way. And, you know, you might as well try to focus on elevating consciousness to sort of a level that is, you know, based around truth versus projecting things from within. But anyways, we can talk about that another time. And thanks for the compliments, and thanks for coming on, and your stories are super cool, man. Where can people find out more about you right now as far as your music, Jackson?
At the moment, you can find... I took everything off of iTunes just a little while ago. Okay. But you can go to Bandcamp, Jackson, JJAAXXNN, and yeah, I've got my previous album is up on there.
Cool.
And I'm getting ready to release this new album, Young Dolphin, and it'll be on iTunes and all that jazz probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Cool, man. Well, send me some of that stuff.
Before I called you, I dropped 2 tracks in your face box.
In my butthole.
And you probably felt them being inserted, but
yeah, I wonder what
I
that was.
Them up pretty good, so you wouldn't feel it.
Cool, man.
But yeah, give them a listen, man. Let me know what you think. And likewise, like if you have any new tracks, like it's specifically the stuff that you were mentioning, you felt like kind of threw the audience for a curve. I would love to hear that stuff.
Cool. I will definitely do it. I haven't really recorded much, but when I do, I'll send it your way. So.
Cool, buddy.
All right.
It's been good talking to you.
Yeah, it's been great, man. I missed you for a while. It's cool to reconnect. I'll keep in touch, and we'll do this again soon, man.
Sounds great, bud.
All right, dude. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My goodness, don't you remember when you went first to school? You went to kindergarten. And in kindergarten, the idea was to push along so that you could get into first grade. And then push along so that you could get into second grade, third grade, so on, going up and up. And then you went to high school, and this was a great transition in life. And now the pressure is being put on. You must get ahead. You must go up the grades and finally be good enough to get to college. And then when you get to college, you're still going step by step, up to the great moment in which you're ready to go out into the world. And then when you get out into this famous world, comes the struggle for success in profession or business. And again, there seems to be a ladder before you, something for which you're reaching all the time. And then, suddenly, when you're about 40 or 45 years old, in the middle of life, you wake up one day and say, huh? I've arrived. And by Jove, I feel pretty much the same as I've always felt. In fact, I'm not so sure that I don't feel a little bit cheated. Because you see, you were fooled. You were always living for somewhere where you aren't. And while, as I said, it is of tremendous use for us to be able to look ahead in this way and to plan, there is no use planning for a future, which when you get to it and it becomes a present, you won't be there. You'll be living in some other future which hasn't yet arrived. And so in this way, one is never able actually to inherit and enjoy the fruits of one's action. You can't live at all unless you can live fully now. We'll be right back.
so loud. Baby, don't get so loud. Baby, don't get so loud.